new Joe Catanacci.
The torch has been passed.
If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him.
I have no doubt that he's an unwitting agent of the Russian Federation.
I mean, the man has very strong control.
It is scary.
I can imagine, at least in the early stages, flattery, complimenting him.
Joe Catanacci.
We want a real meeting with a real agenda. This ain't Miss America, this is America.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Joe Catanacci.
24 minutes in front of the hour, in the middle of the second hour of the program here till 10 o'clock on the Big Talker FM on this Thursday, June 13th. Yael Lisowski from the Consumer Choice Center once again joins us, and he joins us from just down the road out in the Charlotte area after testifying on Capitol Hill last week. He's out and about. He's everywhere around the world, a well-traveled man. That's why we talk with him about ideas and things that are implemented all around the world, how they would work here if they are going to be implemented. Of course, Senator Bernie Sanders continued to defend his policies and his push towards socialism yesterday, actually arguing that Americans would, quote, be delighted to pay more taxes if his policies are carried out, such as free health care, free education. Well, let's see how things work in other places around the world. And when it comes to free health care, free education, let's focus in on places like Norway, Denmark, and also let's talk about how those policies are implemented through a massive taxation system. And Yael Lisowski going to break that down for us. Also, the broader support that we're seeing around the world and the growing trend of populist type officials being elected in places like Italy, Austria, Hungary, India, Brazil. The list is getting longer and longer and longer. That all sparked from, well, the 2016 election of Donald Trump. Yael, it's great to have you back on the program. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. And I know we have had this conversation before, but I think we need to bring some context to the results that we're seeing from other places around the world when it comes to the growing trend of officials who are being elected by this group of people or that group of people in different parts around the world. But when we hear Bernie Sanders talk about how Americans would be delighted to pay more taxes for things like free health care and education, well, how would it work here? Would it work? Free health care for all, free education. We hear it being, and we talk about it, but really we don't get deeper into it when it comes to places like Norway, Denmark, other parts of the world. Can you break that down for us? I know you've traveled a lot, ton. You've lived overseas. You have studied this plentifully in your day, and we'll talk about those types of policies that have been implemented around the world and how that would work if ever that came here to the United States.
Yeah, I think, to break it down for your listeners, the most important thing to understand is that if you are an American today and you're in the middle class, you're actually one of the richest people in the world. Anyone who's living in the United States is part of the global 1%, and the middle class in the U.S. is actually one of the richest in the world. Number one is Luxembourg. There they have a huge banking institutions and a lot of money there. But in the U.S., you are fairly well off because of your disposable income and because we have more competitive institutions and because we have less taxation. So one thing I kind of wanted to break down was Sweden and Denmark. These are always examples that are heralded by Bernie Sanders and the democratic socialist types. The thing to understand about these countries is that they are very prosperous countries. They are very rich, but you are going to have to be willing to pay upwards of 45 to 60% tax on your income. And we're not talking about millionaires and billionaires here. We're talking about everyday people who would be in the middle class, people who are making anywhere from 30 to 70,000 US dollars a year household. So it is a trade-off. And that's something that I think the people on the Bernie Sanders side would like to say Americans are ready for, but I'm not really sure that's the case. I think there's a lot of issues in our country that people are very cognizant to think about and talk about. And I think that's one reason why Trump was elected. But if you look at these other countries, if you look at Norway specifically, this is a country that is very close to the U.S. in terms of their middle class and how much income they have after taxes, but it's also an oil state. They make huge amounts of money from the oil industry. They're huge exporters, and they also serve as a great bridge between Russia and Europe. So they're swimming in cash, and that really allows their system to benefit a lot more than, let's say, the system in France or in Germany. So there, that's not really the best case scenario when you're trying to talk about democratic socialism, because it's very close to the style of economy that they have, particularly in Venezuela, where they're totally reliant upon oil. So if you ever are to see a transition away from oil or the price of a barrel goes down, Norway's social democracy would actually be very hurt by that. And there's actually a couple great Netflix shows that people can view on that. One of them is called Occupied. It's about what happens in Norway when all the oil goes away and the green movement takes power. So that's something that you really have to think about there. When it comes to Sweden and some of these other countries, again, there's a lot of great companies that come out of that. Anyone who's been to an IKEA knows that's a great Swedish innovation. But then you're going to have to trade your ability to make more money for this kind of very secure social safety net that a lot of people in Sweden have. I have a lot of friends who are activists in Sweden who are still trying to change the system. It's not as if everybody is gung-ho happy. They have political debates much like we do. And there's a very large free market movement that would like to lower taxes, that would like to shrink the size of the state. So this is still happening a good amount. When it comes to healthcare and it comes to education, that's something important to always think about. Why do we here in the United States have so many people who are trying to apply to our universities? It's because the quality of the education is way higher. And the same applies to healthcare. The greatest specialists in the world, when it comes to orthopedic surgery, when it comes to cancer research, when it comes to pharmaceuticals, are based in the United States. Our institutions have been able to create these models, been able to create these innovations, and you do have a huge influx of foreign students across the U.S. Anyone who's been to a four-year college in the last few years knows this and has seen the amount of foreign students on campus because we have better universities. They're constantly marked at the very top of all quality lists, some of the best education you'll find in the world. You can settle for an okay education in Sweden. You can settle for an okay education in France. The issue is you're not going to have the levels of specialization, the levels of innovation that we are able to have here in the United States. Now, again, there's plenty of problems, plenty of things to discover, but when you really look into the facts and figures, this kind of democratic socialism dream that Bernie Sanders believes is happening in Europe is really anything but. And for the people who support it, obviously they're going to be in favor and they're very willing to pay that high level of taxes. But if we look at the example of France, with the yellow vest, les gilets jaunes, who've been protesting now for almost a year, when they were faced with higher taxes, they couldn't take it anymore. And they have a very small middle class, and people who are trying to get by every day weren't able to pay that additional tax for fuel. So that's the kind of question, and that's the thing that we're always trying to deal with. But overall, if you look at the numbers, the person in the United States who's in the middle class, who is middle income, has way more disposable income than any country in Europe.
And I think we can go right from there with that. Yael Osowski with the Consumer Choice Center here, breaking down things a little bit further and deeper than, well, I have heard anywhere at any time related to the broader conversation, related to how some elected officials and others here in the public light in our country want to push the U.S. Towards policies that lean towards Europe and other parts around the world. That being said, you talk about disposable income for Americans. Do you, and in my mind, even I would say some supporters, particularly younger people that are just making their way in the world, that are big time supporters of maybe a Bernie Sanders, they're all gung-ho about it until maybe then it's time to pony up when it comes to implementing these policies and then actually going forward with a taxation system where you're, giving 60% of your income to the government. I think, all well and good, free education, free healthcare. Well, then when it's time to do it, would these young people be as supportive as they are right now, given that, that they may not be in the workforce or, may not have yet started adulthood, so to speak?
Yeah, and even the best systems in the world that do exist for healthcare, when you look at the rankings, these are not fully government systems. The UK is a good example. It's the NHS. It's brought up a lot in the Brexit talks. The National Health Service is revered by most people on the left in the UK and broader society at large. But that's a totally public system run by the government. The better systems that exist in places like Sweden or in Switzerland are actually mixed. So yes, you have a government guarantee of universal coverage, but the providers are all private and everyone is competing. Prices are transparent, and there's a way that you can have medical innovations. And that's something that you just don't see in these more government type systems. And so the examples I would offer to your listeners are both in the UK and then also in many provinces in Canada. And in many parts of Canada, it's illegal for you to try to find any kind of private health clinic, which is just unfathomable to the rest of us. You have emergencies or you have a specialization, some kind of procedure that you need. We're very lucky here in the United States that we're able to get particular procedures, medicines. We're able to do that because the law allows competition. Not to say that it's perfect. There's plenty of issues with it, plenty of issues with pricing and transparency and middlemen, and there's a lot of things on the table to change that. But still, to have a kind of one program that will fit everyone, it's not working very well. Where I live most of the year in Austria, the issue that we have there is the elder, sicker people are using the system constantly. And for you as a young, healthy person to try to access the system, it's actually very difficult. And even for routine procedures, there are waiting lines. There are hoops that you need to jump through. There's sometimes months on end where you need to wait for particular procedures. So again, it comes down to priority. Do you want to have a system where everybody's going to be treated exactly the same, but of a lower standard? Or do we want to offer people that next level where institutions can compete and you can get access to high quality care if you're willing to pay for it? There's a reason that many doctors, particularly in Europe, are actually trying to move to the United States. It's a much, much better model for doctors. It's a much better way for them to actually get paid for the hours and hours that they have to study and learn their craft. I mean, that's incredibly important. So are we going to see that in the United States, this kind of broad-based system? I don't think so. And I don't think that people would really stand for it if they actually saw what it meant, if they actually had to sit in these waiting rooms and actually had to put their names on a waiting list for particular procedures. So that's definitely, when it comes to healthcare, very important. And it comes down to the price tag. Another thing not mentioned in Europe, and actually I will give praise to President Trump on that, most European countries don't necessarily pay for their own defense. Through NATO, some countries do kick in a little bit, but most countries are not meeting their obligation. So the U.S. is effectively subsidizing the military spending of many countries in Europe. So that's another thing to look at, is how much these countries do have democratic socialism, let's say, but are very reliant upon the United States, not just for the military spending, but also for the great innovations that come out of the pharmaceutical industry. That's something that's talked about a lot here, is the prices of certain medications and pills, and everybody's had some pill that has been way too expensive that they've had to take. But if we look at the prices in other countries, they're much lower. The reason for that is because all the innovation, the research, everything is done here in the United States, and then these companies are forced to negotiate with these countries and really offers subpar to what we have here. So they don't have access to the best medicines. They're going to get access to the standard medicines at whatever price is negotiated between the government and these companies. But again, all that innovation is coming from the United States. So while we can talk about democratic socialism in Europe all day long, it really would not exist were it not for the power and the sheer force of the entrepreneurial system in the United States.
Yael Lisowski with the Consumer Choice Center. It's amazing. In just about 15 minutes, you broke down a conversation that you know, is often left untouched by many. And in your mind, why do you think that you know, we scratch the surface on this? And because I guess we live in a world of sound bites and 10-second clips, and we can't have an actual in-depth conversation about these things and actually talk about the solutions to problems, or coming up with newer ideas, or you know, giving a fresh take and a real look at things that go on around the world and in this country. You know, why is it in your mind that we can't get some more substance, like a more substantive conversation like we just have had here as compared to what we hear maybe on talk radio or the news on the day-to-day?
I think it's because people are looking for solutions. And it's much easier, I think, at the end of the day, for people to just say, hey, look, We have a problem in this area, whether it be school loans or whether it be the cost of health care. We have the green fairy known as the U.S. government that can fix it all. But as everyone knows, and again, I don't want to always use the federal government. Just look at your local government. Look at the state government. You know, are there areas where we've given more power to that government and things have gotten better? In most cases, no. You need to have competition. That's the only way to bring prices down. It's the only way for people to know exactly what the best products or goods or services are going to be. That's why we talk about consumer choice and Consumer Choice Center, because that's what people need. They need to have the ability to choose. And if you have this kind of one-size-fits-all solution, you're not going to get to choose. It'll be handed down, and there'll be no competition, there'll be no innovation. And, you know, that's unfortunately what we're up against. And it's really up to people who want to criticize this to put forward positive ideas. And there's a lot of them. There are think tanks across the country who are churning out great ideas, who need help to try to translate that to the broader public. Because when you put someone like Bernie Sanders at a lectern and he's giving a speech and talks about how the government's going to take care of everyone from cradle to grave, it sounds great and it sounds easy and it sounds like it can be done in no time. But there's no administrator who knows all who will be able to fix everything. That's why it's up to us. It's up to us to have more information to really find the best products ourselves, because we're the only ones who are going to really find the best products for our family, find the best services for ourselves. So if we can figure out a way to talk more about that, about what great innovations are happening now, I think that is a way to move forward and hopefully steer the conversation away from this kind of more democratic socialist system in which we're actually just giving more power to political institutions that most Americans don't trust. Trust in Congress is at all-time low. People just do not have confidence in these institutions. And it's not because we're not giving enough of our money. It comes down to exactly the institutions that are in place and the incentives within it. So the more that we can do to tell people, look, there's better ways that we can do this. We need people to compete more. We need a better, more robust market. Let's weed out the bad actors. That's the best way that we're going to have better quality education, better health care, and hopefully get on the right track.
Yael Lisowski from the Consumer Choice Center with us here this morning. An interesting conversation, a deeper conversation than you're going to hear anywhere else over the last 25 minutes on some of the ways things are run in other parts of the world, how and if it would be implemented here, what you'd be willing to sacrifice in order to do so. As again, Yael began the conversation, even the middle class here in America, you know, combined household income is $65,000-$70,000 a year. We're talking about the top 1% globally around the world. Yael, as always, man, great conversation, and I'm going to get with you soon. We'll get you back here on the program right around the corner here.
All right. Thanks so much, Joe, and thanks to all your listeners. Have a good day.
Yael Lisowski with the Consumer Choice Center. It's amazing that people don't tap into resources like Yael and other like-minded thinkers to present these ideas to you, make your head turn a little bit and churn a little bit with information and things that you can use to, not attack, but counter some of the arguments that you may hear at the across the dinner table from some of your Looney Tune friends out there who think free this, free that, more government control is the way to operate here in the United States of America. We're 7 minutes in front of the hour. We're going to take a quick timeout. Didn't even get to one of the other topics that I wanted to discuss with the IL here this morning on the recent trends that we're seeing across the country. Several nations placing anti-establishment type groups and people in power, many of which advocate for stricter immigration policies across their lands. And we can get you a list of those countries and the officials after the break. We're going to have a tight, quick segment after this.